Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Our topic today is ISIS and the Syria and Iraq connection, and the answer to a very good question that my guest, Brandon Turbeville, posed. If ISIS and Al-Qaeda are the Islamist enemies of Israel, why don't they attack Israel? Why are all of these, battles in other countries going on a daily basis if they're such a great enemy of Israel? So my guest is Brandon Turbeville. Brandon is a writer out of Florence, South Carolina. He holds a BA from Francis Marion University and is the author of 6 books. He also has a radio show called Truth on the Tracks. And the links to Brandon's articles, where you can get his books, and his show, Truth on the Tracks, is posted at CindySheehanSoapbox.com, the Soapbox People's Network. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Brandon Turbeville answering these very, very good questions. Brandon Turbeville, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hey, Cindy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for being on. The reason I contacted you, or had Dee Dee Miller, my production assistant, contact you, is that I read a very compelling article you wrote on your blog. I think your blog, I have it right in front of me, is called Brandon Turbeville. And you have your own podcast or radio show, don't you? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I do. I write for actually a number of websites. Activist Post is one, and then there's also the anti-media. But my personal website is BrandonTurbeville.com. That's where I repost all the articles and the interviews and the archives of my show, which is called Truth on the Tracks, over at UCY.TV.
Well, that's interesting. So it is a TV show?
It's a radio show. Yeah. Oh, okay. It's 1 hour a week, and I try to cover some of the current events and some of the historical context, like what we're going to talk about tonight with the Israel article.
Okay, and so Dee Dee and I were talking. She also happens to be my sister, not just my production assistant, so I call her my assistant. We thought that your show, Truth on the Tracks, why did you name it Truth on the Tracks? We were trying to figure that out.
Well, it's. I guess I could come up with some profound reason, but Actually, it's just based on the Bob Dylan album "Blood on the Track." So, I wish I had some profound explanation, but that's not. That's about all there was to it.
That's pretty profound. So, your article was called "Why Isn't ISIS and Al-Qaeda Attacking Israel?" Which, to me, when I read it, just seemed like a perfectly logical question to ask. And I had never seen anybody ask that before. And this was during your article, was it like during the pretty much the height of the bombardment of Israel against Gaza?
Well, it was around that time, to be honest. I don't remember the exact date,
right,
but it's around the time, and it's all that's really continuing.
Aren't so many things happening right now that it's just mind-boggling?
Yeah, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Syria, whether it's Gaza, we have the whole world, which is you're becoming inflamed, and you got to wonder, where is all this going to lead? And the question is, do you think that the people in power, right, the main power brokers, the intelligence establishment, the ruling elite, in other sense, the shadow government, do you think they're crazy enough to start a world war? And I think they are.
Right. I absolutely agree with you. And we don't know each other, and all I know is your work, but my opinion is that Barack Obama was like the perfect front man for what you call the shadow government, for the military-industrial complex, or whatever you want to call the continuing violence of the empire around the world. And it's just amazing to me that with a Barack Obama as this front man for empire, that people who would be against all this stuff, if McCain or the other one was president, are just basically silent.
Yeah, exactly. And to, you know, and I should say that's one of the things I admire most about you and your work is that your principles didn't change on Inauguration Day like they did for so many people.
Right.
The war didn't stop.
Those aren't actually principles. They can change.
Exactly,
know?
Right.
They can change depending on who's president or whatever. Those aren't actually principles. So.
I remember so many people who were, they would even consider themselves liberals, right? Under the Bush administration, they were anti-war, and they took courageous stances against the war. But on Inauguration Day, as that war continued, and as torture continued, and Guantanamo Bay continued, and then we committed this heinous crime against Libya, and now Syria, and controlled the Arab Spring, the same people are in support of that. The same people that told me that war was wrong when Bush was engaged in it actually supported the NATO invasion and military, military attack against Libya. And you're right. That's not principles. That's being a dupe.
Well,
systems.
I like to say those people were never anti-war. They're just anti-Republican war.
Right.
And it is very mind-boggling. And you know why, Brandon? Because Obama doesn't conduct wars. He conducts humanitarian interventions.
Right. That's the great thing about it, you know, is that it's a slight rhetorical change, semantics basically, but you have on one side of the political aisle this presentation of war as a, you know, protection of American way of life, which is ridiculous, but also on the other side you have this presentation of humanitarian intervention, the responsibility to protect, and all of that garbage that gets promoted. And of course, you look at, I think Vladimir Putin just recently made a statement about everything the United States touches turns into Libya. Well, it does.
Uh-huh.
Look at it. It's an absolute disgusting situation over there. It's not anarchy. It's not just anarchy, right? It's much worse than just anarchy. I guess it's the products of anarchy. It's absolute insanity.
Oh, absolutely. The insanity without even the appearance of opposition is just very disgusting. But the thing is that I also want to talk to you about, I think everybody knew that there was an entity called Al-Qaeda before 9/11 happened. Everybody had heard about Osama bin Laden. And then, of course, after that, many of us learned about the roots in this of the CIA and, things like that. Al-Qaeda is a product, it's a creation of the CIA, blah, 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 whatever. But I pay attention to what's going on in the world very closely. I had never heard of ISIS before they recently sprang up as the empire's enemy du jour. Can you tell us a little bit about ISIS and Syria and Iraq and what's exactly happening?
Sure. Well, to be honest, you may have never heard the name ISIS except for the last year, but you had heard of them because they were Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Remember that?
Yes.
When we heard about Baghdadi, the leader of of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. This guy, of course, he's a Guantanamo graduate, right?
Uh-huh.
This is a guy, this is kind of how it works, right? These guys come out of Guantanamo and they end up running death squads and Al-Qaeda organizations. But as you mentioned, you go all the way back to the 70s and the creation of Al-Qaeda with Brzezinski and the CIA and so forth. And then you can go on up through 9/11. Now we come back to, 2013, 2014, and we see go back further to 2011, and we can see the Syrian crisis, right? The destabilization going on in Syria, where we were told we were going to see moderate rebels. Of course, there were never any moderate rebels, never. It was always violent from day one, and it was always made up of fundamentalists and mercenaries and Al-Qaeda factions.
Funded by
the United States, right. Britain, France, and assisted, and we'll get to this in a minute, but assisted by Israel.
Uh-huh.
And but so we've got these mercenaries, these fighters engaging in battle in Syria, and of course, as the propaganda machine would have us believe, they're moderates. But as more and more information came out, we see that some of them are al-Nusra Front, which is al-Qaeda, right? And then we have the Muslim Brotherhood, which is it's very similar, right? The lower at the top or top regions of Muslim Brotherhood, you have these bureaucratic types, the academics, the lawyers, and businessmen, and so forth, who are just corrupt and connected to U.S. intelligence and British intelligence, because that's what created the Muslim Brotherhood. But at the bottom levels, of course, you have the fundamentalists and the dupes who go out and chop heads.
Right.
And that's what they did in Syria. So to make a distinction between al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, the Yarmouk Brigades, the ISIS, ISIL, it's not worth the distinction, right? There are battles between different groups in Syria, in Iraq, but it's not because they're different organizations, different ideologies, or different connections to intelligence agencies. It's because the people at the bottom, the fighters, are mentally incompetent, right? And they are fundamentalists, so they will turn on each other at the slightest disagreement. This is why there's battles between the two. But make no mistake, al-Nusra is connected to al-Qaeda, which both al-Qaeda and al-Nusra are connected to ISIS. They're exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
There is no point in making a distinction between these groups. Now, ISIS is a direct descendant of al-Qaeda in Iraq. It became ISIL, which is the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Then its name changed to ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and Sham, or Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. And, of course, now it's the Islamic State. These things just keep changing, right? And people can't keep up with it, but, to make it simple, don't make the distinction, because Syrian rebels, ISIS, ISIL, all this stuff is the same terrorist organization. It is, and it's run by NATO, by the United States, Britain, and France.
Right.
In fact, right when we saw this seizure of large swaths of territory in Iraq, across Iraq and into Syria, sort of the eastern part of Syria and, well, the northern part of Iraq,
mm-hmm.
by ISIS, we knew, people who have studied the situation in Syria, we were talking about this a year ahead of time, that these terrorists were shipped in from Turkey.
Right.
It only cropped up in some of the alternative media outlets several months ago. But the fact is, we had reports that there were tens of thousands of these fighters who were armed and trained and funded by the United States, Britain, France, NATO, in Jordan. That's where they were trained, and they were also funded by Saudi Arabia, shipped into Turkey, and through Turkey they were brought in to Syria. And you can look at the map and see their supply lines. It goes straight through Syria and into Iraq. Now, of course, we're told that the United States had no clue that any of this stuff was happening.
Right.
They listened. I guess they were too busy listening to each and every phone call that you and I make and that every person in the country makes. They just didn't notice. They could have turned on Iraqi television and found this out, but they just had no idea, which is unbelievable. But now we have this situation where there's the Islamic State and they're a huge fighting force. And the question, a lot of people are faced with was, how did they become this huge fighting force, right? If we're funding moderate rebels, if the United States, the richest countries on the face of the planet, are funding the moderate rebels, how in the world did Twitter donations outpace billions of dollars from the State Department and the U.S. government and the British? It didn't, because all of that money that we were giving to the so-called moderate rebels, and by the way, that's the Free Syrian Army, what they consider the moderate rebels.
Right.
And there's nothing moderate about the Free Syrian Army. By and large, the Free Syrian Army doesn't exist, but when it did, the Free Syrian Army was engaging in beheadings and all kinds of savage behavior too. So don't let anyone tell you that there's such a thing as a moderate rebel in Syria. We keep looking for moderate rebels, a legitimate moderate rebel, but since 2011, nobody's ever been able to produce one to me. So that's a situation that we have in Iraq and Syria. And of course, now we're seeing that this is going to be used as a justification for a bombing campaign in Syria,
right,
which
right.
is what they wanted to begin with.
Right. For quite a while.
So we have this situation where death squad organizations and terrorist organizations are used to do one of two things. We have they can engage in act as patsies in actual terrorist attacks on domestic soil, like 9/11. Or they could be used as proxy armies, right? This is the Brzezinski method. This is using the proxy armies to destabilize Syria to go in to Libya, because this is the repeat of Libya.
Uh-huh.
And it could be used to destabilize the governments there, overthrow the governments there. It's not a concern because if they seize power in, over these governments, these people are incompetent at governing, right? They can't have a legitimate government because they're squabbling, they're petty, they're psychopathic, they're just incompetent. So they don't have the power to actually resist a major world power like the United States or Britain or even a major corporation that wants to come in and take over their resources. They're all broken up microstates and mini states, as Brzezinski would say.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why we have that happening now. We also had, there were two more reasons, and I'll quit ranting here, but there
That's
was the idea of breaking up the Maliki government
right.
in Iraq. Remember,
uh-huh.
ISIS was the end of the world, so the answer to that from the United States was Prime Minister Maliki has to go.
Right,
that makes
right,
a lot
right.
of sense, right?
And who, by the way, is a puppet of the U.S.?
Well, Maliki actually is not really a puppet. Maliki is was building a coalition with the Iranians. And he was helping the Iranians ship aid to Syria, which is why they wanted Maliki to go. Now, the guy that they wanted to replace Maliki with, he was a U.S. puppet. And that's why they wanted Maliki out.
Maliki was a puppet. Maybe what he was doing at that point was self-preservation.
Well, he certainly, you know, there's this idea that there's a historical, you know, and, you know, disagreement between Sunnis and Shiites, and
right.
there is, of course, that, but it's been exacerbated by Western powers. And this is what Maliki was bridging, right? Again, the Iranians, who are Shiite, and Syria, which is, you know, it's a mix, but it's largely Shiite as well. So he was bridging this gap. And one thing that the West does not want is Arab nationalism or
right.
or any kind of united Middle East.
Absolutely.
That's based on peace or anything. They don't want
right.
peace there.
No.
So they had to get Maliki out, which they've done now, to break that alliance. But they also wanted to use this as an excuse to bomb into Syria. They're going to use this as an excuse to bomb ISIS in Syria, because the argument, remember, this is the Vietnam argument. You can't put handcuffs on the troops. You can't let the Vietnamese attack you and then run across the border into Cambodia. So you open
right.
up the bombing into Cambodia. Well, this is the same idea, right? When you got Syria, you can't attack ISIS in Iraq and then let them run across the border into Syria and then put handcuffs on the troops. You have to bomb them in Syria. And what that accomplishes is bombing strategic targets. Make no mistake, they will not weaken ISIS. They will weaken Syria,
mm-hmm.
the Syrian government, the Assad government.
And
that's
what they've wanted to do for quite some time now.
Right, they want to create a buffer zone, and what they mean by a buffer zone is a staging ground for the death squads to launch more attacks even deeper into Syria. So those are the reasons that we have ISIS where it's at today.
Wow. Well, thank you, Brandon. That was a great expose about that. So, first of all, before we get into the reason for this interview, you know, for the record, are you anti-Semitic?
I am not anti-Semitic.
Okay. Great. Neither am I. But every time you, like, question Israel, of course, or the U.S. Israeli cabal and the violence in the Middle East, that's the first thing that they roll out against you. But you had a great, like I said, you asked this great question that everybody should have been asking. Why aren't ISIS and Al-Qaeda attacking Israel? Now, of course, Israel, I think, is an apartheid paranoid state. And they have a reason to be because they have taken territory and homes and land. And they have made Gaza into this open-air concentration camp. And I've been to the Middle East doing my peace activism, and everybody, all of the Arabs not just, yeah, Arabs, whether they're Christians, whether they're Muslims or whatever, in these surrounding states, like, recognize that a lot of this violence, the U.S. Led violence, and you're correct to say also Great Britain, France, and Germany, is to make Israel even more safe, because this is what you call divide and conquer. They call it the Lebanonization of the Middle East. It's breaking up every state. Not only do they not want any kind of Arab, pan-Arab entity, they want every single state broken up into little tiny factions that are fighting each other, and it's supposed to make Israel more secure. But why aren't they actively launching attacks on Israel every day if it's the supposed enemy?
Right. That's something that most people don't, you know, put together. These guys have considered themselves the mortal enemies of Israel, but they haven't attacked Israel not once. Now, Hamas is slightly different animal, but you know, ISIS, how many attacks against Israel have you seen by ISIS or ISIL or Al-Qaeda? You haven't seen any so far. And the reason is, again, because these groups are controlled by Western powers. They're directed by Western powers. And if they were given the orders to attack Israel, they would. But they're not given the orders because the West doesn't want them to attack Israel. And Israel also is involved in supporting these groups. So Israel, you know, obviously isn't going to turn them on themselves. If you look back, you know, the ISIS, for instance, is not going to bite the hand that feeds it.
Right.
Israel has been providing medical aid to the death squads in Syria. This was presented in the mainstream media, of course, as Israeli charity for the victims of the Syrian crisis. But what it really was they had they have hospitals on the border where they bring these death squad fighters over and treat them and then ship them back into Syria to kill more people. We even had Benjamin Netanyahu, we had Bibi getting his picture taken with some injured death squad fighters in the hospital. I mean, it's a photo op. And Israel, on a number of occasions, have launched airstrikes against the Syrian government. They've actually launched airstrikes as cover for invasions of death squads. I mean, if we look back in, it was this year, actually. It was June 2014, I believe. And this was under the pretext of dead Israeli teenagers.
Right.
It's a bad time to be an Israeli teenager because they just keep getting, you know, killed at the most opportune times. But, you know, what happened was that Israel coordinated these 10,000 fighters that I mentioned earlier on with Turkey, that they came, when they came across the border from, you know, when Jordan trained them and they came in through Turkey. But Israel actually acted as the air power, the air support power, because Israel launched attacks against Syria as the death squad fighters were coming across the border from Turkey. So in other words, they acted as Al-Qaeda's air force to get the death squad fighters into Syria, so this death squad swarming effect. And so again, that's you know, another example of Israel aiding these death squad fighters. So that's why they don't attack Israel. Now, when you get into Hamas, you look at the history of Hamas, and you see that Israel actually created Hamas, right? This people might look at the news recently and consider Hamas as the only opposition to Israel, but this is not the case, right? There's Fatah. Fatah was the leading aspect of the Palestinian Liberation Organization for years. But the reason Hamas existed was because Israeli intelligence and Mossad supported the creation of these so-called charity organizations, called the Mujamas and Mujama al-Islamiya by Sheikh Yassin, who was a fundamentalist. And they supported him. They helped give him funds. They would support their libraries and their schools, and they would promote this ideology. And when the fundamentalists would battle Fatah, the Israelis would come in and attack Fatah, because that was the attempt, was to divide and conquer the Palestinian resistance. And that's largely what they've done. That's why any Palestinian resistance to Israel is now pretty weak and tepid. and Hamas is, you know, not really doing them any favors, the Palestinian people. So a long way around that question, Cindy, was okay. that they're not attacking Israel because Israel is involved with the Western powers and in controlling these groups.
Well, and as you point out in the article, and like you just said, the Hamas sending their little rockets in rarely kill any Israelis at all, but the response from Israel to Gaza is overwhelmingly violent and destructive.
It's a provocation, and it allows Israel the well, I guess in the minds of some, the moral authority to respond, but not to people who've actually studied it.
Right.
And so it's a provocation that allows that those invasions as to be justified politically. But, you know, regardless, like I said, Hamas is there as an entity. It's a nobody should mistake the fact that Hamas is a fundamentalist organization. They are Muslim fundamentalists, and they're not good guys. The reason they get so much support is because look at the alternative.
Right.
You know? And that's the only reason they have that support, because the secular support was damaged by Israel and it was damaged by Hamas. So this has all been split, and that's why you have this weakness here. The ISIS and other death squad fighters, of course, are simply a part of that intelligence wing, that Western intelligence wing.
Wow. Well, Brandon Turbeville, thank you so much for being on the show and for, you know, giving us all this information. And we did talk about your website at the beginning, but would you like to give it again and then where people can access your show?
Sure. My website is brandonturbeville.com, but I also write for activistpost.com and theantimedia.org, and they can find my show at ucy.tv, which it's aired every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's called Truth on the Tracks. And again, my website is brandonturbeville.com.
Thank you, and we'll put those links also on the newsletter about the show. So, Brandon, thank you so much, like I said, being on the show. And keep up the good work.
All right, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
That's Cindy Sheehan Soapbox for this week. I hope that you were informed and inspired to become further informed and take further action against this out-of-control empire. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller, Brandon, for taking the time to be on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox and give us this information, and you especially for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.